Bow with me. God, who is our mother, birthed us from your bosom and makes us the church. Feed us with your spirit on this day you make in celebration of Dr. King and all who precede and follow, we pray. Let the people of God say, Amen. Isaiah cries in this fourth verse, but I said, I have labored in vain. I have spent my strength for nothing at all. Yet what is due me is in the Lord's hand, and my reward is with my God. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. taught many lessons involving the life and the work of the church. He teaches us what it means to be the beloved community. He teaches us to pursue our dreams. He teaches lessons involving cross-racial, interfaith, and cultural diverse partnerships, and he teaches you can't lead unless you give people reasons to follow. Dr. King teaches us all of that, but it is another lesson that helps shape both my theological mindset and my prophetic perspective. Dr. King teaches lessons about fighting. His philosophy regarding nonviolence and civil disobedience frames the way progressive Christians envision the work of kingdom building. Dr. King's life as a constant fight enlightens a theological construct related to why and how to fight. He fought outside the perception of traditional fighting. He's fought systems rather than people. He fought institutionalized racism while confronting assumptions made about his right to sit at the table where equality is served and it tastes so good. He fought to vote, to learn, to eat, to sleep, to walk. He fought to be seen, to be heard, to be understood, and to be accepted. Dr. King's fighting bears how life as a black person living in America is an unyielding fight. In fact, we don't know how to stop. Fighting for black and brown people living in America is a must. Fighting for black and brown people is not conditioned by mitigating circumstances, forcing a radical response. Fighting is predicated by one's mere existence as a black person, judged by pigmentation. Dr. King teaches being black is an ongoing fight to be seen, affirmed, and understood. It's just what it means to be black. It's just what it means to be brown. It is a privilege not to have to fight. Seeking and maintaining peace is the primary goal of our Christian witness. It's what we sing about. It's what we believe, that peace is at the very core of our theological claims as a church. And liberation is the gift of singing songs that don't conjure hope in a life on the other side of subjugation. Privilege is not having to sing those songs anymore. And to be honest with you, I'm tired of singing about life played with the streets of gold and what it will feel like when a trouble of this world will be done. I love Mahalia Jackson, the legendary gospel singer who followed Dr. King everywhere he preached. And I love hearing her declare, no more weeping and wailing, no more weeping and wailing, no more weeping and wailing, coming, going home to be with my Lord. And I love when I hear that song that she sang, trouble in my way, I got to cry sometimes. I lay it wake up night, and that's all right. Jesus will fix it after a while. But when will Jesus fix it? When will the wailing stop? When will the trouble be replaced with that joy promised to come in the morning time? You know, trouble lasts for a little while, but joy come in the morning. And I hear the prophet Sam Cooke proclaim, it's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is going to come. Don't you get tired of all this fighting? Has your soul gone weary and your heart broken by disappointment because of the fight? When will the fight stop? I've never seen a day in America without a war. My whole life has been lived with a war somewhere. And I've never seen a day without news about someone being harmed because of their pigmentation. It's something that I can't remember not happening any day of my life. Can a brother get a break from a lifetime of unrelenting fighting? When will the fighting stop? And thus, in the declaration of Isaiah today in this lectionary text, that fourth verse again reads, "But I said, I have labored in vain. I have spent my strength for nothing at all. Yet what is due me is in the Lord's hand, and my reward is with my God." When I read this text, I hear, I feel Isaiah saying, I give up. All of my energy has gone into fighting to make a difference. I'm tired of fighting to be heard, to be seen, to be understood. I'm placing it in the Lord's hand. You know, the Lord's going to do what the Lord's going to do, but I feel tired. And I'm learning to live with the life of unfulfillment, but God will fix it. But in my life, I'm tired of this fighting. I grew up in a culture of fighting. My daddy was a boxer. My daddy taught me to fight like my daddy. I was a boxer. I was a Muhammad Ali fan. My style of boxing was and is fly like a butterfly, sting like a bee. My daddy was a Joe Frazier fan. His style of boxing was like Frazier, full speed ahead, bob and weave and push with and punch with a fury. My daddy's love for Frazier and my love for Ali was the subject of many contentious moments in our household. And my daddy loved Roberto Duran, who modeled his fighting style after Joe Frazier. And of course, I love Sugar Ray Leonard because my style and I pray my good looks modeled him. The fight took place on November 25th, 1980 at the New Orleans Superdome. I watched the fight on a big screen at the St. Louis Blues Hockey Stadium. It was a rematch of their first fight won by Sugar Ray Leonard. Leonard began taunting Duran in the seventh round. He wound up his right hand as preparing to throw a bolo punch, and then he snapped a left jab that landed flush on Duran's face. It's a beautiful thing. Sure, go see it. Watch it on YouTube. In the closing seconds of the eighth round, Duran turned his back, waving his glove, and yelled, "No mas. I quit. I ain't going to fight no more." Sounds like a big song. It might be a hit. "I'm not going to fight no more." There was time left in the fight. It wasn't over yet. Leonard was leading on two judges' scoring cards by only 2 points. The other judges had Leonard winning by 1 point. It was close enough to win. Frustration won the fight for Leonard. Taunting lost the fight for Duran. And so Isaiah came close in my mind and giving up. I can hear the vexation of no mas in the text. I have labored in vain. I quit. I've spent my energy for nothing. I've no more. I'm not good enough to win. I can't fight anymore. I don't want any more of this. No mas is a cry of activists working to fight for change. I quit is the declaration of the church workers overcome by hypocritical teachings of some Christians. It's a moan of men and women and children after fighting to cross the American border only to be met with a call to build a wall and go back home. No mas reflects the tears steered by perpetual fighting. You hear the yelp of poor people in search of a meal for their children. Hear the shout of sick people in need of health care and women hollering frustration because a man gets paid more than while doing far less than they do to get this, to do the same job. Hear the whimper of single mamas giving up hope and getting help they need to fulfill their children's dreams. No mas It's a cry of people who've done the fighting for so long that they can't take it no more. And so what does the church have to say for the people who are crying no mas in the middle of the fight, who give up when there's a potential to win? And the first thing I want to tell you to share with those who give up, want to give up, you were made and prepared for this purpose. Go tell them, you were made and prepared for this purpose. Fighting was a way, has a way of fracturing self-identity. It hinders confidence. It wounds the spirit of people fighting to dispel the myths and opinions of forces positioned to extinguish dreams. Fighting can do that. Fighting makes it harder to silence your critics. Fighting feeds seeds leading to the blooming of internalized hate. Fighting makes it easy to believe you deserve the oppression that you receive. It's what you get just because you're not good enough to do any better. Fighting instills a theology that rationalizes insufficient living as a construction of God's punishment. And the prophet states, "You are my servant, in whom I will display my splendor." The prophet speaks. Hear the prophet today. You are wonderfully and majestically made in the image of a loving God. You are the servant of God. She made and prepared you to fight for what belongs to you. You deserve equal rights and equal pay. You deserve the right to live in America and to be protected under the laws of this Constitution that we claim to be created for all human beings, at least if you're a man. This is the message of the church for anyone in battle after long seasons of fighting. You have to keep fighting because you were created to win. Don't give up. Keep going. And go tell them, that God is fighting with you. Go tell them God is fighting with you. The prophet reminds us, she formed us in her womb to be her servants in gathering the lost children back to herself. We, all of us, are chosen to be the light to a world in darkness. Our love is the message that reaches the ends of the earth. We, all of us, you and me and all of us, are fighting to preserve the integrity of that message. We, all of us, are called to stand up in the face of kings, queens, members of Congress, and presidents in the affirmation of a divine will. We, all of us, are created to keep fighting. We're made to do this. We are called to fight until they bow down because the Holy One has chosen you and me to fight against any message that contradicts the very love and will of God. But when we get tired, and we do get tired, when our hearts can see the lack of strength needed to keep fighting, when we stand disappointed, disturbed, and disgusted, declaring no mas, there is still good news. We don't fight alone. Before I was born, the Lord called me, the text says. From my mother's womb, he has spoken my name. He made my mouth like a sharpened sword. In the shadow of his hand, he hid me. She made me into a polished arrow and concealed me in her quiver. It is enough. Yes, it is. That God made me and you for times like this. Yes. It is enough that God prepared us to face the challenges, even if it feels like we can't continue to fight. And yes, it helps knowing God will never leave us or forsake us, even when the storms rise and the enemies of liberation and freedom establish roadblocks, public policies, theological treaties, and presidential executive orders to fuel our discontent. Yes! It helps knowing we are prepared to keep fighting. It is enough. But when we can't fight any longer and stand on the blessed assurance that we are not alone. Yes, it helps that we have each other. Yes, having an united congregation like this, inspired by a collective vision, helps. But she walks with me. And she talks with me. And the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. Go tell them that. Tell them that when they feel like giving up, they are not by themselves. God is there. And then go tell them that the fight isn't over yet. There's still time left in the fight. The lesson of Dr. King's fight is the same as Roberta Duran's fight. One died before the dream is fulfilled, and one quit before the end of the fight. Both leave us with an empowering message during seasons of torment. The fight isn't over. Hold on. Just a little while longer. And I often ask the question, I'm sure some of you ask that same question, how long must I wait? How long before the troubles of my day cease and the joy of tomorrow rises to end my battle for inclusion? How long must we fight the tyranny of this American presidency? I wish I had a witness. How long must I fight for inclusion, diversity, and equity? How much longer, Lord? Because it feels like we're losing this fight, and I want to scream from the top of my voice, no mas, can't take no more. I came by to remind all of us today, don't give up. Don't throw in the towel. Don't turn your back on fighting against your joy. Keep fighting because it's not over yet. Don't scream no mas because there's still some fighting left. And remember that we are surrounded by a mighty cloud of witnesses. Some of them died fighting. They never gave up. They fought till the very end. Some got weary on the way to the freedom. They couldn't endure the anguish of the journey. Some, like Dr. King, died fighting. Some, like Roberta Duran, quit in the middle of the fight. The question for us is where we stand. Will we throw in the towel or will we keep on fighting until we see the dream fulfilled? But no mosque is the testimony of wounded workers troubled by the unyielding attacks against their comfort, inclusion, and peace. No mosque is the pronouncement of an annulled witness of Christians seeking inclusion within an insensitive institution that I call the church. No mosque is the declaration of denied demonstrations of God's undisputed call for justice. No mosque is giving up too soon because the fight is too hard, advocates are too few, and resources are too limited. No mosque is giving up on your vision. No mosque is giving up on God. No mosque is giving up on your dreams. And I come to tell you not to quit. I came to tell you to fight against the oppression. I come to tell you to fight the demoralizing messages of privilege and to fight divisive rhetoric and remain encouraged by the call to transform this world into a beloved community. You've got to keep fighting because we are called to do this. And hear the voices of the Almighty call the witnesses. You can't quit. The fight isn't over. You got to get up because you were made to do this. And we are created to win. Even when you feel alone, don't forget that God is with you. I'm reminded of a day I was in Kostroma, Russia. It was shortly after the fall of the ruthless separation of the people there from their ability to worship God. And I was standing in Kostroma in a temple, one of those great monuments that was created by the Russian Orthodox Church. The people had been denied a chance to worship for all those years under the communist regime. And I was standing there with a group of older people, mostly older, who had been worshiping underground for all those years. And I stood in the middle of the temple, and there was a bright light coming from the ceiling. It was coming from the ceiling, and I could see it at my foot. The light was there at my foot, and I looked at the light as if to pray. I prayed because I wanted to go home. The worship lasts an eternity. I thought black churches worship long. over an hour with no pews, standing, listening to the story of Jesus from birth to his public ministry, to his death, resurrection, and ascension. It's a long story. A long story sung in a language I did not understand. I knew a few words. I knew how to ask to go to the bathroom. I felt it important to ask that question. I'm standing there, disconnected from the idiomatic expression of my faith tradition. I'm standing there, disconnected from the people. I do not understand anything that is being said. Not only that, my heart is broken because Rodney King had just been beaten by police in Los Angeles, and I carried the dread with me to Russia. I'm standing there trying to connect to the worship the best I can. I'm trying to connect to the songs the best I can. I don't understand any of it. And I look at the light and I pray, God, place in my head the sound of a B3 organ. Lord, place in my head one of those good old black gospel songs to make me feel like I'm at home, Lord. Let me just drown out all of this noise as I cross my heart, and as I cross in the way they cross, and I bow the way they bow. Give me something I can connect to. I felt disconnected from God. I wanted to give up on the worship service until I felt someone beating against my back, viciously beating against my back. And I turn around, and there's a short little woman, about 4'2". At least it's not like that. She's probably 5 feet, maybe 4'8", short, beating against my chest. And I look at her, and there are tears coming down her face, tears that were probably brewing over the years of not being able to worship freely, tears of not being able to come into her place of worship for all those years, tears and watching me stand there, the only black man in the room, and I like to say probably in the whole city. And she looks at me with those tears, and she beats me against the chest. And then she points to the place where the light came from. Then she beats me again against the chest, and she points it again. And then she beats herself against the chest, and she points, and she does it over and over and over again until I finally get the message. She is saying to me, my God is your God. Your God is my God. And in that moment of disconnection, in that moment of rage, in that moment of discontent, in that moment where I did not feel God, in that moment where my spirit cries, no mas, I quit, I feel the spirit of the God in that place where I reminded where God shows up is wherever I stand. And where I stand, there is hope. There is hope. And my message to you today, in the midst of your work, in the challenges of your life, whatever you're enduring in this season, don't cry. No mas. This is the word of God. It's for the people of God. Thanks be to God.